The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Boston Red Sox welcomed in Ranger Suarez, officially signing his contract, doing a presser alongside Sam Kennedy and Craig Breslow and greeting the people of Boston. He seems excited to be here. We're excited to have him, certainly, but questions still remain about the Red Sox's identity and trajectory for 2026. I'm Nick the Voice, joined tonight by Chris Filico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. So, Chris, what was your reaction? Obviously, you got all the niceties, right? To me, Ranger, or Ron Hare, as he said it's pronounced, although he said, of course, he doesn't mind. He seemed very excited to be here, which you expect from a guy. Of course, everyone is going to say that they can't wait to be in the city. Oh, my God, when I was a kid growing up, this is what the organization meant for me. But, you know, it was cool to hear those stories, certainly. Seeing, you know, he was talking about pitching on the same mound as Pedro and Clemens and Babe Ruth and how he's looking forward to that. And, you know, obviously there's only so much you can say on the topic, but I am happy, as I've stated a lot, to have this guy on the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. He was the takeaway I had was, coincidentally, it was Scott Boras basically suggesting that this was a foregone conclusion that Ron Hare Suarez was going to be joining the Boston Red Sox since, like, the infancy a free agency. And he was a name that, like, we really were not attached to at all, which kind of goes back to, I know we always joke on the show that, like, if you hear a name attached to the Boston Red Sox, so it's a foregone conclusion, you're not getting them. It's just kind of smoke. So this was one of those instances where it really did prove to be true, because, I mean, we really didn't hear anything about Ranger Suarez. I know we were high on him as a group and as a podcast. I mean, I know Terry was crazy about him, especially with his metrics, specifically in the postseason. So I'm super excited to have him. I did find it funny that they made it like it was this foregone conclusion. And the fact that we didn't hear about it and there was really no one attached to Ranger Suarez, maybe that is somewhat true. For me, the real tell in today's press conference was really when it got turned over to Craig Breslow and he started talking more about the defensive metrics of the pitching staff, but then pivoted to the infield and suggest there was more work to be done. So I know we're going to kind of get into that topic, but to me, that was the real major takeaway.
I agree. I think that what we had today was a real statement about how Breslow is viewing this schematic of the team, what the team on paper, in theory, is supposed to do. And he is viewing the Boston Red Sox as ultimately a run prevention type of team. That is the success that we're going to have is through our pitching staff. And not just the pitching staff, but also the defense around it. He spoke a little bit, of course, about how we were league-leading in errors last year, at least in terms of the outfield, although he spoke very highly of the outfield. But when it comes to the infield defense, you need better infielders. And so, you know, we'll, like you alluded to, we'll talk about that going forward. It is interesting and kind of disappointing, almost, because part of me is disappointed just because the Red Sox offense has been getting steadily worse. It just feels like less explosive, less dynamic, less intimidating over the past few years. And this year is going to be more of a decline, less power, most likely less home runs and more hoping for those, you know, 3-1 victories, which of course you see postseason success all the time like that. Good pitching ultimately will help you win. But it is sort of pigeonholing us, I'm afraid, almost, where I feel like we have the money and the resources to be a dynamic all-around threat like certain other teams in the league are. And instead, we're sort of small-balling it almost, saying, oh, well, we'll play our game on the base paths. We will steal. We'll manufacture runs when, as much as I love situational baseball, I love manufacturing runs, it does put me off a little bit just because I know that we're favoring that in lieu of the 3-run home run.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you know, I heard a stat today that there's no team that scored more runs in the MLB since 2009, since the New York Yankees, and yet since 2009 they have not won a World Series, right? So, and I'm not trying to take a shot at them. It's just when you think about that, that kind of is pretty wild to think about, right? Like, because I mean, that is their last championship. It's closer to 20 years than not, and the fact that they could score that many runs, and I would imagine a good portion of them are probably in the regular season and obviously not when it really matters in the postseason. Otherwise, they will have won more games and probably had a World Series. And there's almost this pivot now from a lot of big market teams that seem to think that they have to somehow be more creative in trying to manufacture runs or focus on defense. Like, you see the same thing with the Mets here in New York, because I'm in New York, and it seems like they're trying to get away from all these power hitters, quote unquote, and trying to just really shore up their defense. Because I mean, let's face it, let's look at the Boston Red Sox. If we play better defense, we maybe get out of that series against the Yankees, and then who knows? And there's a part of me, I feel the exact same way, where it's like, man, I really feel like this lineup is going in a completely different direction. It's definitely not nearly as intimidating. And we're used to, you know, World Series teams, specifically with the Boston Red Sox, having an intimidating lineup. Whether it was the Manny Poppy era, and then you had Dustin Pedroia, and Poppy was still there, and Jacoby Ellsbury, and all these other players. And then, you know, the 2013 team still had, you know, Poppy, but I mean, the rest of it was very lunch pail, if you will. And then in 2018, it didn't have a Poppy, but I mean, it had JD Martinez, who wasn't, he's probably two thirds that, but I mean, so many more dynamic hitters that any one of them could take, you know, out for a long ball home run. And it doesn't seem like that's what we're trying to replicate at this point. I think it is going to be interesting to see what we do, but I would agree with you. I mean, we talked about in the war room that if this Red Sox team had to face the Yankees, which re-signed Cody Bellinger to a 5-year deal, so they're essentially now strolling out the same team, just bringing back basically Gerrit Cole, right? Which should make them a better team than the team we faced in the playoffs. Now, I would agree that we have definitely bolstered our rotation, and it's definitely better than what we strolled out there. But I would say our lineup is a heck of a lot less intimidating. I don't know if we could beat the Yankees if we had a rematch in the wild card this year. Like, what are your thoughts on that?
That's a really good point. I'm glad you brought up the Bellinger contract, because that was something I wanted to talk about. I decided, sort of spurred on by the Yankees bringing back Bellinger, mostly the Yankees are running it back in a lot of ways. You know, you look at a list of their additions, and Bellinger is going to be right alongside Grisham, despite neither really being an addition in the true sense of the word. You know, those are guys who were there last year. But like you said, they're good guys who had an impact last year. You know, I went and I just compiled a little list out of curiosity, not just in how the Boston Red Sox are setting to project in terms of, you know, each position in terms of the league, but specifically in terms of our division, because at the end of the day, you know, it feels like winning a division in the AL East is, you know, it's like trying to win a race against in the Olympics. You know, you have a collection of the fastest people, and you know, you might very well be the greatest runner in your country, but when Usain Bolt is next to you, you know, Toronto has had a very good offseason. New York is a very good team. Baltimore is very young. Really, Tampa Bay is the only team being slept on right now, which makes them dangerous, granted, in some ways. But, you know, based off of what I read, I went and I looked at the list of all the players and all the projections. And right now, it definitely feels like Boston has the edge in terms of pitching. Just comparing our rotation, not only is the top of our rotation really just a nasty 1-2 punch. Crochet, Suarez, that's amazing. You have real upside from guys like Gray, guys like Bayo, even Oviedo. And if those guys don't work out for whatever reason, you have unbelievable depth that I feel like no other team in our division necessarily does. You can pivot to Sandoval, Crawford, Tolley, Early, Harrison. Hope that some of those guys work out, certainly. But that's not to say that, you know, any other team is bad in that category. You know, Toronto has a really solid rotation. New York, very solid rotation. Even Tampa Bay and Baltimore weren't great, but certainly not free wins, you know? When it comes to the bullpen, I looked at the top three guys potentially from each pen, and I would still say that, you know, Chapman, Whitlock, Slayton is a group of guys I'm very confident in. But again, Toronto has a nice pen. New York has a nice pen. Even Tampa Bay actually has a very nice bullpen. They picked up Griffin Jacks. They've got that guy Clevinger. They're able to, you know, get you out on that front at the very least. But offensively speaking, I agree. I mean, we seem to falter in the places that we all knew we would. And that's the frustrating part. In terms of catcher tandem, as much as I like Narvaez, Wong is going to have a lot to prove. We only have one catcher potentially going into this season. And you put that guy next to Kirk or Rutschman or even Austin Wells, and suddenly, you know, you're feeling a bit envious. You can't help it. Even first base, we added Contreras, which was a great addition and a guy who I'm looking forward to seeing. But you look at what the other teams in our division are rocking with, whether it's Guerrero, Alonso, Rice, or Aranda, those are very good hitters. I do give us the edge in terms of our outfield, but when you look at the infield, up the middle, second, and even third base and shortstop, you're left wanting more. And that's going to be the issue. Is Story going to be able to replicate his season, or is he going to backslide? Who is going to be playing one of the two premium positions that the defense that's being touted, right? Romy's defense isn't all that. Hamilton's is, but you sacrifice a lot when it comes to his bat, and even his defense last year was a bit spotty. Meyer's defense is phenomenal, but there's questions about can he hit lefties, and then there's, you know, questions, can he even stay healthy? And it's just leaving me at a point right now where, you know, I'm not even asking, are we the best team in the league right now? Are we the best team in the division? And the answer is, I don't think so. And not even necessarily are we close to that. What are your thoughts on everything I just said?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we're close to the best team in the division. You know, and I think, like, even the question I was saying, like, as much as I hate to say it, I don't think that we could beat the Yankees in a wild card series. Even though you can make the argument that maybe we have the advantage in the pitching staff, I just think that there's still such a drop off in offense, right? Because I mean, the Yankees are essentially bringing back the same team, and that was the difference in the series. Like, they were able to come up with the runs in game two, and in game three, when we basically, I mean, we might as well have been shut out in game three. We did nothing. And so I get Craig Breslow really putting this focus and premium on defense, but if you can't manufacture runs, like, you can't count on winning a game 1-0, 2-1 every game. It's just not realistic. And I don't really know where we go from here. I think, you know, I did an episode with, I think it was Charlie and Jeremy, to kind of rank the division. You know, at the time, you know, I think I had the Yankees still winning the division. They had the Blue Jays. And even the way things have kind of panned out and unfolded in the last 2 or 3 weeks since we did that, the Jays got better in some areas, but you could argue they got worse. Like, I think they were really counting on Kyle Tucker as being a realistic option. They didn't get him. They couldn't pivot to getting Bo Bichette, so they lost Bo Bichette. Yeah, they got Dylan Cease, but I do think that their offense took a little bit of a ding. And let's face it, like, they finished essentially with the same record as the Yankees. They had the tiebreaker, and that's how they won the division, and they ended up going on this run to the World Series. And while it seemed like they are the most aggressive and most willing to go for it, if players don't come to you, that only goes so far, right, as far as in free agency. Now, I do think that they still have the ability to possibly make some trades and take on big contracts if that's the route they want to go, which might be a little bit more feasible because they're definitely willing to take on the money. So, I mean, you can make the argument it's a toss-up, but to me, there is a level where it's Yankees, Blue Jays, and then you've got the Sox. And, I mean, you could even make some arguments if the Sox really don't bolster this offense, that if the Orioles go back to the Orioles of 2 years ago and then you added the pieces they have, like, they could be a problem. Because the Red Sox struggle against the Orioles even when we're better than them. Like, they're always a thorn in our side. And if they go back to the team that we thought they were going to become with all that young talent and they put it together, and now you've added Pete Alonso and the pitching, I mean, they could be a real threat, especially if those young kids, you know, Jackson Holliday, really like, you know, take a step forward here. And that's the thing that concerns me. I know a lot of people are, concerned about the Rays taking this big leap forward. I think they're a year or two away, but I would agree if the Red Sox stay on the same course where they're just focusing on pitching and they don't do anything with the offense, the Rays are a team that, you know, you get a couple of injuries, they could pass you. And it's, you know, injuries are inevitable. You just have to pray to God right now it doesn't happen to the pitching staff, because yes, while we have depth, we don't have a ton of depth, especially with after some of the moves that we made, because we did get rid of a lot of prospects.
Yeah. You know, there's not going to be a free win in this division. That's for sure. This is going to be hard fought every single step of the way. We don't have the advantage of having a team like the White Sox, who have improved, granted, but I'm talking about past years, the White Sox or the Rockies or something like that. This is going to be a tough path forward, which is a good thing in some ways. Obviously, I don't want a cheap trip, you know, to the postseason just to get unceremoniously bounced, like seems to happen to a lot of teams who, you know, the Central from last year is an advantage of that. You know, how often do we think, oh, the Twins or the Guardians or the Royals or someone has finally figured it out, the Tigers, they finally figured it out, and then, you know, they don't quite look as good as they did earlier in the year. But yeah, I mean, Tampa Bay has a lot of problems. I agree. I would be extremely surprised if they didn't finish in last, just because I have so much more faith in the other four organizations right now and the talent that's on those rosters than I do in Tampa Bay's. But I do like their pitching staff a lot more than I thought I would. I thought their rotation was solid. I actually have it noted down here. They have Rasmussen, Pepio, McClanahan, and then Mats and Boyle are their predicted starting five. That's not too bad. In fact, on FanGraphs, they rank that as about the 16th in terms of projected WAR, which obviously you take with a grain of salt. But that is a good indicator, I think, of exactly what Tampa Bay's strength is, which is their pitching staff. I like a lot of their relievers, too, as I mentioned. They have a few really good hitters in Aranda and Diaz and Caminero. But, going back to what you said about in terms of just the pecking order right now in the division, I agree. I think Toronto and New York are the clear one and two. I put New York above Toronto as well. Unfortunately, I mean, I would put us as above Baltimore, but I think that the distance between us and Baltimore is less than the distance between the two teams, us and the two teams above us. I think that there's a greater chance of Baltimore having a great year, all those young guys taking steps forward, whether it's Bisalo, whether it's Holiday, you know, and having, you know, a great third place or second place finish, or even go on some miracle run. I see that as a possibility. And I think it's more likely for the Orioles to leapfrog us than it is for us to leapfrog Toronto or even New York.
100% agree. I see it the same way. I think you can make the argument that in New York and Toronto is like close to being a toss-up. You could make the same argument that the distance between us and Baltimore is the same, like as far as that toss-up versus whoever's going to finish in third to second place, which is sad to say. And the truth of the matter is that whether it's us or Baltimore, both of our teams are only really maybe a piece or two away from either challenging for first place or completely knocking out that second place team and putting them closer to whoever's going to be in third place. And I guess that's the frustrating part, is because, especially for us, because, and this is no offense to Baltimore, but like we have the resources, they just don't, right? And it's sad for those fans, but that's just a reality. Like we should still be playing like a big market team when it comes to free agency and money, when you look at the revenue and the share and the split and how much is reinvested in comparison to Baltimore. And the fact that we're even having this conversation, that they're like within that much of, you know, distance with us of challenging for third place, essentially, it's just, it's a sad state of affairs for the Boston Red Sox. It really is. And again, I'm not trying to crap on them, because the truth is we're one or two moves away, and it doesn't even have to be this crazy power hitter. Like, just get someone that has the potential for 20 plus home runs, that plays decent defense and bolster this bullpen. And like, okay, I feel good about this team. Like, maybe we could challenge the Yankees. Maybe we could challenge Toronto. And if one of them gets injuries, I mean, which one of them probably will, we could pass them easily. Not even a question. And that's honestly how I feel. One interesting stat that I did just look at, because that whole 2009 Yankees and them scoring the most runs since then really was like boggling my mind. The fact they haven't, you know, they've been to basically one World Series since then and they only got to game five is crazy. However, I think we would all agree that the new dynasty of the MLB is the Dodgers. So if I told you who scored the most runs since 2020, what team do you think that is?
I would have to put my money on LA for the Dodgers.
It is. They've scored 4,599 runs. So, and the reason why I picked obviously 2020, that was their first championship of the three that they have in this little mini dynasty that they've created in the last 5 or 6 years. And, you know, it just goes to show like, so yeah, while the Yankees have scored the most since their last World Series, and that's kind of like a loaded stat, you can kind of play the exact same argument and flip it to the Dodgers since their recent success. And they've clearly scored the most runs, and wouldn't you know it, they have the most World Series in that time too. So it is a loaded stat, and it could be, you could try and tilt the argument either way. And it just goes to show that like, yeah, there's teams trying to reinvent the wheel and come up with new ways to win. But like the name of the game, just like any other sport, like whoever has the most runs at the end of the game is when it wins. Right. And the Dodgers have been better at it than anyone. And have obviously been better than anyone at, you know, winning World Series since that time frame too. So.
Yeah, for sure. You know, this is one of those situations where, you know, I know our crew was split on Alex Bregman, for example, and I'm certainly glad we didn't sign him for the contract that he got. But it's a shame that the player that we're looking for, the player you described, just 20 home runs, good defense, you know, at second or third base. I'm just like, yeah, we need Alex Bregman. You know, there's an Alex Bregman shaped hole on this roster that unfortunately we seriously need. We need to fill. And Alex Bregman isn't going to be the guy. And Bo Bichette obviously isn't going to be the guy. And Eugenio Suarez, I don't think even is the guy. And suddenly you start to realize, okay, how many Alex Bregman-esque guys are even available? It's not going to be Marte, right? So reading what Breslow said again, you know, just about his exact wording were, we just have to play our game offensively and on the bases because our pitching is going to keep us in the game. And that's so true. And it does give reason for optimism going into the season that this pitching staff is going to keep us in the game regardless. You know, we're built to withstand injuries. We have ridiculous starting pitching depth. I totally believe that. But just the idea, like you said, of having to play our game on the bases, it does feel a bit poverty. Like I said before, you know, I love manufacturing runs, but you cannot rely on the hit and run. You know, you cannot rely, especially because I don't necessarily have a lot of faith in certain hitters on this roster. I'm sorry to say. The infield is a major toss up. I love the outfield. I like Narvaez. But when you look at second, third, and short, you have a lot of question marks where, you know, you have Romy, who's good against lefties, you know, certainly not great defensively. You have Hamilton, you have Sogard, you have Meyer, you have Story, who I'm afraid is due for a regression. And suddenly you're like, dude, are we even like going to be able to play small ball with something like that? Are we going to manufacture runs with that? Because Story isn't the type of guy for a hit and run. He gets on base, he might steal, but you know, he strikes out a lot. He whiffs a lot. You know, so I can respect a philosophical change in the organization, but it does make me a bit afraid of how that's going to impact us in the short term, especially when this pitching staff is right in its window and Anthony is here, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I see some comments here in the chat, and we'll get to what you guys are saying in a second. It kind of plays into this. But to your point, Nick, I think, you know, when you really look at our pitching staff, two of the three you can argue are strikeout pitchers, with Crochet and Oviedo being the next. I mean, the rest really pitch to contact, right? I mean, the rest of our pitchers really don't have fastballs that go over 92 miles an hour. Now, Ranger Suarez does have an elite whiff rate, but like I wouldn't call him a strikeout pitcher. He pitched contact very similar to Bayo. He's just better at it, and he's more apt to being able to get strikeouts than Brian Bayo. And to me, like, it makes 100% sense why there's this dynamic shift in, okay, we got to focus on defense, because three of the guys, five guys in your rotation are basically going to get hit, right? And it's not to say they're going to, you know, they're going to give up tons of hard hits, but there's going to be contact, and like the guys in the infield are going to have to play these balls and get outs. And, you know, when you look at Trevor Story, like he had a pretty good season last year. Like the arm's obviously getting weaker. The range isn't as good as it used to be, but like he's above average, at least like when I go by the eye test. Contreras, he's above average. He's not, certainly not elite at first base. We don't know what we have at second base, and we don't know what we have at third base. We know that Meyer is more than likely going to be at one of those places. And I would say he's above average defensively at this point. The real question for him is health, and can he become an above average, you know, hitter at this point? But, you know, I'm looking at comments here, and it's like, do we trade a Jaron Duran and a Brian Bello for an, you know, I don't know if it's Isak or Isaac. I'm saying Isaac Paredes. And I got to be honest with you, like, let's just forget about the Jaron Duran and Bello part. Like, when you just look at what Craig Breslow said today, Isaac Paredes can't be the person you're trading for. He does not fit the mold of what we're looking for. He is a below average defender. And yeah, I think at Fenway Park with his makeup and his swing, he could probably be a 25 home run guy on a good season. And I'd be happy with that offense. But the below average defense, like, you just shipped away your cornerstone player who was good for 40 home runs and would have solved the offensive problems that we have. And Rafael Devers, Rafael Devers is the worst third baseman defensively in the league. So I'm not going to put Isaac Paredes there, but like he's not much better when you look at his Savant chart defensively. So that's not the answer. So to me, like we're going to have to get creative here. And I hate to say it, more than likely it's going to be someone that's not a 20 home run hitter. And like that's going to be their top end if they happen to have a really good offensive year. And at that point, it's like, do you really want to part with a Duran? I certainly don't want to get rid of a Bello, because if you're looking to improve the defense, like that, you're kind of hamstringing yourself if you get rid of Bello, because that plays exactly into what Bello does, right? Gives up that weak contact ground balls that you should be able to turn into double plays if you have an adequate defense, which to be honest, we haven't, but we've put a lot of focus on. So, you know, some of the names, I know you hear Brendan Donovan over and over, and like, I want nothing to do with Brendan Donovan. He does nothing for me. He's okay defensively. He's above average. But he does nothing for me offensively. I just don't see a lot of upside. And I also think that like we've traded enough with the St. Louis Cardinals, and I haven't been too thrilled with what we've gotten back compared to what we've given to this point. Even though I'm pretty happy about Contreras, obviously not happy about Sonny Gray. So, like, let's just stay away from there. Let Haim go and figure out how to trade with someone else. That's not us. I know we're attached to Nico Horner, and I just don't see the Cubs trading him to the Red Sox. And I honestly would be scared to even know what the hell we would trade to get Nico at this point. Like, I feel like we want to talk about getting robbed. That would be scary. But, I mean, he would be, like, the primary guy that I would want. But an interesting name that I was thinking of today, how about a guy like Bryson Stott? Now, his batting, certainly not elite by any stretch of the imagination, but his fielding on his Savant chart is pretty impressive. I know that his arm strength isn't too good, but his range is well, like borderline elite. And I think about that team, and they have a prospect. I think their top infield prospect's a guy named Aiden Miller. And right now, they just don't have a place to put him. And the fact that they missed out on Bo Bichette and some of the bigger names, Tucker was never really in play for them, although I don't know if they even were attached to him. Like, I think a guy like Jaron Duran could fetch you a Stott and maybe a prospect. You know, obviously not Miller, but something from them. And to me, like, I'd be pretty happy with something like that if that's what it takes to shore up this infield at this point. Because if not, you might as well just start looking at a guy like Mickey Romero and just put him there at this point, because I wouldn't get rid of Jaron Duran for nothing. And I'm not packaging him and Brian Bello unless it's for someone like a Ketel Marte. Like, it's got to be elite defensively and offensively. Otherwise, you're robbing Paul to pay Peter in what we're trying to accomplish here.
Absolutely. I think you raised a lot of really good points. First off, I agree. The idea of trading Bello while improving the defense is kind of oxymoronic. You know, you're shooting yourself in the foot a bit. Obviously, you want to add a guy, you know, when it comes to the good defense. You're right. pointing out the sheer number of guys who do pitch to contact. You know, you're improving your entire pitching staff when you add a Gold Glove caliber defender, especially if you improve it in a position of need where it's at second and third base. You know, we're going to have a question mark regardless, you know, whether it's Sogard, whether it's Romy, you know. But it's interesting because we're sort of locked into having to trade someone just because of the current luxury tax threshold, where we're a little bit over, and a Duran trade would get us underneath that. A Bayo trade would get us underneath that too. I'm sure there are a few other things we could do, whether it's shipping out Sandoval, if we could spin that. But, you know, you almost wonder if other teams recognize that, and that kind of kills our leverage a little bit. They know. We stated pretty openly, I think, what our intentions were coming into this offseason, financially speaking. And right now we are not slated to meet that standard, which is frightening, you know? And so now when a team is getting called about, hey, do you want Jaren Duran? They're thinking, oh, yeah, I do. But you also want to kind of give me Jaren Duran. You're incentivized to give me Jaren Duran. It's tough. You know, the list is shortening. I like Bryson Stott. I do think that that's a pretty good option. I like Horner as well, but I agree you're going to get ripped off there. I'm almost anticipating another player that has not been on our radar, just like the Sonny Gray wasn't on our radar, just like, you know, Ranger Suarez wasn't on our radar at the end there. You know, this is probably going to be what the Red Sox end up doing. I would be very surprised if there's a guy who checks all the boxes, unfortunately. I am afraid that we're locked into having to choose between a guy who does this well and this well, but not this well, and a guy who, you know, maybe excels in other categories but struggles in others. You know, do you want a guy who's going to hit 20 home runs, or do you want a guy with Gold Glove defense? You know, you're going to have to find some way to prioritize one of those things, because ultimately I'm not sure if a compromise is even going to be possible at this point. And that's a painful reality that we find ourselves in, where the roster has just not been constructed in the most intuitive fashion over the past few years. Mikey Romero is an interesting name too. I just saw the Woo Sox post something about him being like a top five third base prospect. And I'm sorry to say how ignorant I was. I said, when did he start playing third base? I didn't even realize that he made that change. So, you know, it's nice to have guys in the system, but then you're sort of taking the Baltimore Tampa Bay approach of hoping that Christian Campbell pans out, right? Tristan Casas pans out, Mikey Romero, David Hamilton, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. There's, you go that route, you now have basically three or four prospects that you're counting on to really contribute. And then Tristan Casas, five, if you're even counting on him coming back to play first base at some point, which is just too much of a gamble at that point. And then if you're going to trade someone, you really have to get rid of Duran and just try and bolster the bullpen. And it's like, you're really going to get two good arms, because that's really what you would have to do to make it worthwhile for Duran, unless it's like someone super elite. And then at that point, it's probably a wash financially. So that doesn't really do anything for you. But I agree with you as far as teams recognize, based on what the Sox said at the beginning, as far as the financials. The one thing I will give them credit, specifically Breslow, because I know we've crapped on him for quite some time. So like, you got to give him his roses when he deserves it. You haven't heard much talk about the finances as of late, and specifically after these moves, even though we're all speculating this, he's been very like a concerted effort in really focusing on where he still sees quote unquote deficiencies with the team and where the moves have to be to fill those needs. And there's been no really alluding to the financial part of it. Like, we may know that there might be that underlying requirement, but the fact that it's not out there and that he's really making it about the defense, I think does help, because the further you get removed from time and the longer it takes for the Sox to make a move and showing that willingness for us to still be quote unquote above the threshold, I think that the other teams thinking they have that leverage does kind of wash away a little bit if it doesn't become a thing, or you don't quote unquote feel that pressure. So I think as long as they play that smart, that could work out. And the fact that if Jaren Duran's the one in talks, the good thing is like his name has been floating around for 2 or 3 years now, and no one knew that we'd be over the threshold at that point. So I think at that point, they just look at it like, oh, well, you know, Jaren Duran's kind of been on the trade block now for a couple of off seasons. They clearly have you know, a ton of outfielders, Willie Abreu, et cetera. So it should be interesting. But, yeah, I don't know. There's not a lot of names out there that really wow me. And if they do, it's like you probably have to pay them more than what it would be worth to trade at that point. So,
yeah, you know, we have some time to figure it out, fortunately. And hopefully, you know, over the next month or two, the Red Sox will, you know, put their nose to the grindstone and figure out which player is the best fit. And hopefully we can hammer out a deal. The only problem is, of course, the closer you get to opening day or even just spring training, other teams are figuring out their identity. They are locking into their guys. They are saying, okay, you know, because obviously if we're asking any team to trade us a major league level infielder, a major league ready infielder with great defense, presumably come March 15th, you know, or even February 15th, even now, that team has probably based a lot of their decision-making around the anticipation that that guy is going to be on their starting lineup opening day, of course. So now suddenly, if you're asking them to trade that guy, they have to think, okay, how are we going to, you know, how are we going to replace this? You know, they have to suddenly start scrambling. Do they have someone in-house? If not, can they swing a trade of some sort for a guy who fits their ideal? So it is interesting. You know, I wanted to mention a tweet that Chris Cotillo tweeted out a couple hours before we started talking, maybe an hour and a half before we started talking. And he said, this is not a surprise or particularly revelatory, but have heard the Red Sox are in fact involved in serious trade talks all over the place when it comes to adding to the positional player group. This is not a, I think a massive trade is about to go down in the next 24 hours, but more of they have a lot of irons in the fire. And you know, I think that that fits with a lot of what we've been saying, what we've been speculating. And also, funnily enough, it kind of mirrors the problem we've been having in terms of speculation, because there is no one perfect player out there that is the fit. The Red Sox are doing exactly what anyone should be doing in this situation, which is going from team to team, compiling probably a very large list of candidates, ranking them in terms of, you know, who they want more than another, and then considering the asking price. Hopefully we find a good trade before opening day. If we do go into opening day with, you know, all the outfielders still on the roster, that would be a surprise to me, especially because a trade seemed so imminent for almost a year, you know, going back to really this last trade deadline, if not a little further than that even. But it is going to be peculiar if the Sox decide to stand pat, because then I'm going to wonder, well, who were the names that you went after and what was the asking price?
Yeah, I agree with you. I would find it very hard to believe that they stand pat. Because to be over the luxury tax for this, like in this lineup offensively, would be a travesty, if you will. And that's crazy because I'm always the one complaining the Sox need to spend money. But I mean, if you're going to be over the luxury tax, it should not be for this lineup. And, you know, the more I think about it, and I think about some of the tweets I've seen the last couple of weeks with names like Masataka Yoshida, like that name keeps coming up, but it's not directly to trade rumors. But like this sense where it's like, well, you know, you have Masataka and like you could put him in the right package. And Tristan Casas, right, has kind of been this dark horse where it's like there might be teams willing to gamble, especially with the lockout and like just not knowing what's going to happen. And then obviously we said Patrick Sandoval, right? And then obviously you have Jeremy Duran and Bayo. And I really want to just take Bayo off the table unless it's you're upgrading. Like if he's in a package where you're doing an infielder and then potentially a pitcher, even if it's not one of the same ilk as him in the rotation, but one that can at least fill somewhere, because then you have options to bring up early. And then now that person becomes depth, then I'm open to it at that point. But the more that I think about it, when you have all these guys, like the fact that we're more than likely going to have a lockout, like take a Masataka Yoshida contract, right? Which at face value, it's like, wow, what an overpay. But when you look at the duration of what's left and now where the direction of MLB baseball is going into this lockout and then more than likely coming out of it, depending on if there's going to be a hard salary cap in the next couple of years, what's, you know, whatever. His contract's not that crazy. because when you look at like Masataka Yoshida for the next two seasons or three seasons, whatever's left on that deal, versus 3 years of Kyle Tucker or Bo Bichette, like, granted, he's not the same player as them, but he's also not making nearly as much annually as them either, right? So it's like, okay, I could see a team that would never be in the realm of a Kyle Tucker being able to acquire him, never able to convince a Bo Bichette. And they're like, all right, like, Masataka Yoshida, is he the greatest? No, but like, you could do worse at DH. Yeah, we're not happy with him, but crap, there's plenty of teams in the MLB that don't give a crap that he would be more than adequate, specifically at that money, that are trying to give away money and no one will take it. Then you take like a Patrick Sandoval, we're like, wow, that is way too much money for what he's more than likely going to give us. But for a team, I don't know, out west that no one will take their money, pretty reasonable compared to what some of these pitchers are getting now. And then obviously, you know, you look at Tristan Casas, there might be a team out there that's like, he's a reclamation project that I'm willing to gamble on. And then guess what? Things don't go right. We're going into a lockout anyway. And then after that, he's on his own. He bet on himself, and that's his own problem because there's no money owed to him. And then if it does work out, you get him on the cheap, especially because if you go into that lockout and they come back with a salary cap, everyone's getting paid less. And then guess what? Even if there isn't, he was hurt. So it's like, it's a win-win scenario for that team that acquires him. And then obviously with Bayo and Duran, it's the obvious at that point. But again, I'm leaving Bayo out unless you are solidifying the rotation on the back end or just directly replacing him. It's really the focus should be on Jaron Duran and then trying to get creative, because you know what? You're able to find the right team and package a Jaron Duran and a Masataka Yoshida, a Tristan Casas, or a Patrick Sandoval, and you might be able to get a Nico Horner type player out there in the league that we're not thinking of right now.
Yeah, and I mean, even with Patrick Sandoval, I think that there is a lot of value, just considering he's a starting pitcher with a decent enough track record when he was healthy, on a very, you know, a relatively inexpensive deal in terms of starting pitching these days. You know, I could totally see a team, even in our own division like Baltimore, without looking that far away, that would definitely benefit from having a guy that they could pencil in just into that five hole in their rotation and feel good knowing this guy gives us a chance to win. And maybe you get something out of it. Ultimately, you know, getting under the trade deadline, or not the trade deadline, excuse me, the luxury tax, getting under the tax is this threshold is going to be, you know, it can't be the priority. I understand it needs to happen in the eyes of Henry, and that's the decree that comes down from up top. It needs to happen. But I agree, you know, it would be such a shame to trade Bayo or Duran and take less than what you want because, you know, you're afraid of spending $3 million over that threshold and getting penalized further on that. You know, you don't want to trade a guy like Duran, who's not even making that much money, all things considered, just to get under that. I understand he may have the most value, but, you know, I do feel like there's more avenues. Even like you said on Yoshida, that's a good point. Obviously, no one likes to admit they were wrong about a player, but how about a 50% discount? We eat half of it, and suddenly he's only a $9 million player for whoever is going to take him. That would potentially be a lot more alluring, like you said, to some of these teams that are struggling to find a DH.
Yeah, to me, like Patrick Sandoval, the perfect match for him would have been the New York Mets. And I really could have seen a Jaron Duran and Patrick Sandoval going there. But now with the Luis Robert trade, that kind of takes Jaron Duran out of the mix. Although what I would be willing to do is, because the Mets are desperate for pitching. And like you said, like, even though Patrick Sandoval doesn't fit us, he's such a reasonable deal and he's a proven commodity for a team that's starving for, you know, back-end starters, which the Mets are. Like, maybe you take a flyer on a Brett Beatty who's 26 years old. Yeah, he's a lefty bat, and that doesn't necessarily fit our lineup. But he's an above average, not by much, but he's an above average defender. He's still only 26 years old. He batted like 250 last year, hit 20 home runs. And that's playing at Citi Field, which is not forgiving for a lefty. I mean, I think he could probably be a 25 home run hitter playing at Fenway Park, even as a lefty. You could do worse. And if you're getting rid of Patrick Sandoval, like, to me, there's less risk in doing that than just trading Jaron Duran just to trade Jaron Duran. And then at that point, you probably get under the luxury tax. You retain Jaron Duran, and maybe his value goes up so that when you get to the All-Star break and you really want to make a push, then you could start really, you know, trying to get Jaren Duran out of here for something that's worthwhile and that maybe matches a little bit more. And at that point, you go over the threshold a little bit for a half a season and you're trying to make a deep playoff run. It makes sense for everybody.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. Just a few minutes ago, funnily enough, while we're recording this, while we've been talking, the news broke that the Mets are in talks to acquire Freddy Peralta. And that's exactly what you said. The Mets are looking for starting pitching. And that echoes back to something that I said earlier, where you can wait and you can do your research. But as you do, the other teams in the league are going to be solving their problems. That is what they are thinking about. What is my strongest opening day lineup going to be? And, you know, I agree, like a Patrick Sandoval and Jaren Duran type of thing to New York could have happened. Maybe they could have been a good partner. But then, you know, if you know, they get Robert and they get Peralta, well, that's completely gone, you know. So it's interesting. It's especially a shame because if you look back at some of the arbitration decisions that the Red Sox made this year, I think all of them worked out in our favor. We didn't end up going to arb. I think we agreed with each player. I could be wrong about that. But one guy that we reached an agreement with, which was quite a shock, was Tanner Houck. You know, and, you know, it's interesting because he's coming off that terrible season. He's coming off an injury and he is an older guy. You know, he's going to be 30 this year, I do believe. And he's not going to pitch this year, more likely than not at all. And if he does, it's probably not going to be anything meaningful. And then he might be back next year and then he'd be a free agent. So it's kind of interesting to lock ourselves into paying him $4 million about. I think it was actually a little over that. When you think about, oh, how far are we over the tax? Oh, a couple million dollars? You know, man, I wish we could have taken that back, you know? And it just goes to show again how maybe there's a lack of foresight in the organization right now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's definitely what that specifically looks like. The only thing I could think of is that going into the offseason, they knew that they were probably going to be parting away with depth as far as pitching in this, you know, attempt to try and get additional starting pitching and then bolster the defense, specifically in the infield. And I think it was Cotillo. Someone just tweeted, and of course it like left my homepage immediately because tweets are just flying in now with this Peralta news because I follow a ton of the Met stuff as well here in New York. And someone basically speculated that there within the organization, there's a preference to keep Marcelo Mayer at third base and not second. So essentially what that tells you is that they're going to be looking for second base, people that are primarily a second base up middle of the, you know, infield, which makes sense because, I mean, that's really where you need to strengthen the defense is up the middle. So it's going to be interesting to see what the options are there. And then as far as the Peralta news with the Mets, it doesn't shock me because it's funny. So the Bo Bichette press conference was today, and literally in the middle of the Bo Bichette press conference, the Yankees announced the Cody Bellinger 5-year deal. So like just a little jab to the Mets who thought they were having a good day between announcing Bo Bichette and then trading for Luis Robert Jr. And then all of a sudden that. So there's the two New York teams trying to one-up each other, real shock. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I just saw that with Cotillo tweet as well, and you see a ton of people speculating crazy things. You see the gigantic eyes emoji. I mean, you see one of the I won't say who it is, but one of the personalities here, Red Sox personalities on Twitter is like, we're getting Ronald Acuna Jr. and I'm gonna cry. And it's like, yeah, I don't think that's what's gonna happen, but although if we do, I will cry as well. Happy tears
for sure. You know, at this point it's just it's interesting because, you know, I don't have the time and the resources and most fans don't to go through every other organization and get a good feel for where they're at. But you've got to figure there's a perfect match out there. There's some relatively inexpensive second baseman. Maybe he only does have a year left on his contract. Maybe Jaren Duran won't be the guy to go, or maybe Jaren Duran will go for prospects, you know, and we get some great prospects and then we trade someone else, you know, for some second baseman. You never really know, but you've got to feel like there's a perfect fit, you know, some guy who can give us good defense up the middle, not be a total liability at the plate, and hopefully not cost us an arm and a leg. We have depth to trade from. If they want something great, like an Early or a Toley, you've got to give something great in return, of course. And I don't even know who I would ask for in that situation. But you know, there's got to be a fit, and I just hope that Craig Breslow and this scouting, you know, team that we have, the scouting department, and all the guys that he has around him to help feed him information, I hope that they can find it before those doors keep on closing, sort of like they've been up until now this offseason.
Yeah, no, for sure, because it's got to stay ahead, because like you said, I mean, you said it best, while you're doing work, so is everyone else, right? And just when you think you've got one step ahead, you know, everyone else is moving just as fast, if not faster. And there's with 30 teams in the league, so there's 20 other nine teams that are doing the same work, if not harder than you. And let's face it, like, Craig Breslow hasn't been known to be a very quick mover. It's not his forte to this point in his career. You know, it's funny because now with that tweet, as far as with Marcella Mayer being predominantly thought of as a third baseman on this team, everyone's like, oh, this screams Nico Horner. And so let me just ask you the question, because again, I don't think it's Nico Horner. What it tells me is like, oh crap, we're getting Brendan Donovan. But let's play the game of Nico Horner. What would you be willing to trade to get a Nico Horner?
And that is a great question. You know, the problem is Nico Horner only has 1 year of control, after which he is probably due a pretty decent chunk of change, just because he's got great defense and he's a good on base guy. You know, he might not be a power guy, but he's a very good on base guy. I would not part with Duran one-on-one, you know, it would have to be Horner plus, you know, if Horner was a part of it. Okay. The same thing goes for Bayo. The same thing goes for any of our top prospects. But of course, a player like Horner deserves top prospects. So it's just, it's such a mess. You know, it really is. I think, you know, just off the top of my head, totally early, they're probably off the block for me. Would I be willing to part with Kyle Harrison? Yeah, I guess, you know, trade from depth and say, okay, sort of like we did with Priester, as much as that bit us last year, and say, this guy is probably not going to get a fair shake just with everyone else on the totem pole.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm fine with getting rid of Harrison, but then let's say it takes one of Duran, Bayo, totally early, and you had to get rid of one of them.
Oh, that's,
and I don't think it'd be totally early. They didn't make, that's maybe what they want, but I also don't think it fits the narrative of like fixing our salary cap. So let's say Bayo, Duran.
I think, considering where we're at in terms of our strong pitching and our relatively weak offense, I guess I would lean towards trading Bayo.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. If there was more years of control, I think I would agree with you.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we have Bayo at such a reasonable deal to trade him with the duration of his contract, which I think adds another layer of value that Duran doesn't have, I would probably lean more Duran, because I don't see Duran being a part of the long-term picture for this team. And you have more years of control with Bayo, which makes him a more tradable asset to where I think you can get something back with control. And right now, Nico Horner, to your point, doesn't have that. Now, if you're telling me you're getting Nico Horner and he's coming here and there's like some sort of sign and trade deal where you're getting him for like a 2-year deal going into a lockout, all right, then that's different. But that's probably, my gut is probably Duran. Even though the way you're thinking, I would agree with you, like philosophy wise, the strong part, it's just the years of control part, I would probably go with Duran.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And it's one of those situations, I don't think there's necessarily a right or wrong answer. I think both, you have pros or cons without question. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see, because we are hunting for something so specific, so particular. And unfortunately, I've looked all over the place and I'm like, oh, what about this guy? No, he doesn't fit for this reason. What about this guy? This guy doesn't have enough power. This guy can't hit lefties. This guy can't play defense. This guy doesn't have enough years of control. This guy makes too much money. It's one of those situations where the Red Sox have kind of forced themselves into a very small box where, in theory, as much as I said, there's got to be a perfect fit, and I hope there is. In theory, I mean, the list is getting impossibly short. You know, it's like when you look up on any website, you know, think of like, you know, sorting. right? Whether you're like on a dating app or something, right? You know, your story. Okay. Women, obviously. Okay. There you go. And now I'm looking, okay, well, I'm looking, let's say 25 to 35. Okay. And suddenly, you know, and this and this and this, suddenly the list starts to shrink. You know, so you might not get Sydney Sweeney, you know, you're going to have to, you know, maybe she'll throw out the first pitch for us again, but you're really going to have to get realistic with your standards, because the more specific you are, the more little qualifiers. This guy has to hit 20 home runs and have a gold glove and have 3 years of control. You know, it's going to be like, okay. Yeah, that guy doesn't exist.
Yeah. I'll give you one more name now that it looks like it's going to be more, because when I said Bryson Stott, I was speculating third base. Sure. Now that it looks like Marcelo Mayor is going to be third base. So I just did the same exercise I did to come up with that. And an interesting name that just came up for me when I'm looking at these Savant charts is Otto Lopez, second baseman, Miami Marlins. He's 27 years old, righty righty. And again, when I look at his like offense, not great. Batting run value is extremely poor, but base running value, fielding value, is pretty much almost elite. And the rest of his batting stuff, it's kind of a mixed bag, but I mean, his fielding and his running is like elite. Again, arm strength slightly higher than Bryson Stott. It's probably more like mid, but I mean, his range is 95. Like it's crazy. So like, that's a guy I could totally see us being on that just screams defensive, like, you know, elite guy that's still relatively young and he has a little bit of control here, it looks like.
Yeah, quite a bit of control, as a matter of fact. The only question mark would really be, he does struggle versus lefties, but at this point, like I said, you've got to take what you can get. He's a solid on-base guy, great defense, great speed, like you said, and it does look like, just a glance at his spray chart just off, you know, off the top of my head, does look like he'd possibly be a good fit. You know, he's got a lot of home runs and doubles to left field. So
yeah, I was going to say, in the Marlins, I mean, if he's hitting them predominantly to left field, he had 15 home runs last season, 544 at bats. I could see him being a 20 home run guy at Fenway easily.
So that's a great call out. You know, how'd you find that guy, out of curiosity?
I went on the Savant chart and then literally just put second baseman and then just put like defensive metrics. And he was, I think, like 18th. Cause obviously, like the first 10, you start looking, you're like, all right, these are not realistic second baseman that we're getting. But he's one that I saw that looked like it's pretty realistic.
That's a good name. That's a very good name, considering how much control he has left, everything. And I could see us trading with the Marlins too. They're a team that has a lot of needs right now. You know, they're in that weird, sort of rebuilding, but kind of competing and kind of retooling. Maybe it's a retool. Maybe it's a rebuild. Maybe we're just going to buy. They've been kind of all over the place the last couple of years. Now, so you might be able to take advantage of that.
Would be interesting with them, if you really wanted to get crazy creative with them, is you trade Jaron Duran, Brian Bello for Otto Lopez, Sandy Alcantara, and some prospects. Because
that would,
I think you could probably do something with that.
I agree. Hopefully. I mean, we'll see. For right now, it's just speculation, but it's worth to keep that in your back pocket, because that name is probably one of the more realistic options, one of the more plausible options for sure. And would still carry, though, a lot of upside with it. You know, I said it, you know, just before we wrap up here, I said my last time on, I think that, you know, we're looking for a realistic fit, you know, and unfortunately we're going to have to cut, you know, a couple of things down. I even said that tonight, you know, alongside the idea that, you know, it's probably going to be a name we haven't heard of. So it's, but I said last time on that I just want like a two war guy at this point. Just give me a big league average player. You know what I mean? Give me a guy, maybe he's, you know, a little worse with the bat, a little better with a glove, maybe the other way around. Just give me a solid guy that you can put somewhere every day and feel good about. I don't need an all-star. I don't need someone crazy. Just even right now, a guy who you would feel comfortable penciling in at second base every day, that would make me over the moon at this point, which, you know, goes to show just how much the goalposts have kind of shifted as we progressed from the start of the offseason to where we are now.
Yeah, no, I would agree. But I think it's going to be interesting nonetheless. There's definitely going to be some dominoes that fall, and I do think it's going to be relatively soon because, I mean, crap, we're getting so close to pitchers and catchers, it's sneaking up on us. So, I mean, it wouldn't make sense to let this drag out like the whole Alex Bregman thing did last year. Like, I do feel like you obviously have something brewing between Milwaukee and the Mets, pun intended, maybe not. I don't even know at this point. So, like, there's going to be dominoes that fall that are going to be bigger things, I have a feeling, throughout the MLB. But do keep your eye out. I do think that I would say within the next week and a half, we will have our answer of who will be playing second base for the Boston Red Sox.
I hope so. Thank you, Chris, for joining me tonight. It's been a fun show. Thank you, everyone, for listening in and watching in. We do appreciate it. Hopefully the Sox can figure out something, like you said, sooner rather than later, because the clock is ticking and we are drawing closer to opening day. I've been Nick the Voice, joined by Chris Felico. We have been the Bastards of Boston, and we will see you next time. Take care.